week's parasha is Parashas Lech Lecha. And Parashas Lech Lecha begins on page 54. Parashas Lech Lecha is where we really start getting into the life of Avraham Avinu. And there's a Mishnah in Perkei Avos, the fifth Perkei Mishnah of Perkei Avos, that says, Asara Nisyanis Nisnas Avraham Avinu. Our forefather Avraham was given 10 tests. The 10 tests are basically, we know that the 10 tests span the parashias of Lech Lecha, Vayera, and according to some, even Chayisara. And there is actually a difference of opinions exactly how to count the 10 tests. What's the first test? What's the last test? According to some, the first test is actually not Lech Lecha. But the first test actually isn't even mentioned in the Torah. And that is a test where the king Nimrod told Avraham Avinu that either he starts worshipping idols or he's going to be thrown into a furnace. Avraham is thrown into the furnace and he is saved. So according to some, that is the first test. According to others, it's not the first test. The first test is Lech Lecha. But actually, I'd like to take some time in discussing that test or that challenge that Avraham Avinu had by being thrown into the furnace, which was really actually part of his whole fight against idol worship. That's what Avraham Avinu dedicated himself to doing. He dedicated himself to bringing people to the belief in Hashem and rejecting idol worship. So what exactly was Avraham Avinu fighting? And how exactly did he fight it? So Rabbi Tzio Salomon comes to explain exactly how what we call Avodah Zarah, call it idol worship, pagan worship, what exactly, how are we to understand it? And he starts with a famous Rambam, the words of the Rambam of Maimonides that we've discussed here many times before, which the Rambam writes, "Bimei Enosh, in the days of Enosh, Tohu b'nei adam tois gadol, they made a great mistake. V'nevara atzas chach mehadar, and the wisdom of the wise men of that generation was lost, or they made a mistake. V'nesh atzim atoyim haya, Enosh himself was from those who made the mistake. V'zuhai said to Usam, and this was their mistake. Amru, they said, being that God created the stars and the planets to run the world, he put them up high and he gave them honor, and they are the servants who serve before God, it's befitting that they be praised and given honor. And this is, in essence, the will of God. In order to actually give, to attribute greatness and honor to someone that God has attributed greatness and honor to. Just as a king wants other people to honor those who stand and serve before him. And this is really the honor of a king. When you have a servant of a king, an officer of a king coming to a town, and you honor him because he's the officer of the king, that's an honor to the king. And therefore the argument was made that the stars and the planets and the constellations that are the servants of Hashem, honoring them is honoring God. Ke'evin shadala davar zeh alibam, when this idea came to their minds, they began offering sacrifices to them, to praise them, with words, and to bow before them, in order actually to attain the goodwill of the Creator through this mistake. And this is the essential idol worship, or worship of the stars. Those who truly understood the essence of this worship, this is what they said. They never meant to say there is no God, but the star is God. They never meant that. Rather, the star is a servant of God, and therefore the star deserves to be honored. Hu Shir Yirmiyah Omer, this is what the prophet Yirmiyah said, Mi lo racham melech hagoyim, who does not fear you, king of all nations? Ki lecha ya'asa, for you it is fitting. Ki b'chol chachmei agam v'chol machutzei me'ein kamecha, there is no one like you. U'ba'achis yivaru v'yikaslu meiser havolim eitzu. But the one mistake they do is that they attract that they give over vanities to the wood. Koloimar hakol yoidim shatahu levadecha. Everybody recognizes you are alone. Avol teusa mksilusa mshemedamim zahahevel ritzainchahu. But their mistake is that they consider this foolishness of theirs your will. So the essential idol worship was not in any way attributing godliness to the star, but rather there is God. God has his servants, and it is the honor of the king to honor his servants. It is an honor to Hashem to honor his servants. This is how we will attain his goodwill. And essentially, this is, as he says, those who truly understand idol worship would tell you this is what it's about. Now, as the Rambam writes further on, things got out of hand. And I think they started believing that these stars themselves were God. But those who were wise enough, those who really understood essentially the root of idol worship, and what you see from the prophet Yirmiyah, there were still worshippers who felt that way, that were worshipping that same manner, in which they believed that God is the creator of the world, and God put everything in their position. But if God put them in this position of control of the world, they are his servants, they deserve honor, just as a servant of a king is honored because he is the servant of a king. But that was their mistake. It was a mistake in philosophy. But it was a philosophy in which they actually considered what they were doing pleasing in the eyes of God. And as the prophet Yirmiyah says, even in his time, you had idol worshippers who, again, recognized God as creator of the world. No one is as great as God. But they made this mistake, this philosophical mistake, that they had the way they worship God, the way they bring honor to God, is by honoring his servants. This is how the Rambam frames idol worship, Avodah Zarah. Now, Rav Tzion Salomon adds something very important, and we find these in many different works, such as in the Nefesh HaChayim, and that is that we say in davening on Shabbos, and he quotes this, right? We say, Toivim Ma'orah Shabara Lokeinu, good are the lights that our God has created. Yitzaram Badas Bavina Uvahaskel, he created them with knowledge and wisdom and understanding. Koyach Ugavura Nasan Bohem, he gave them power and strength, liyos meishlim bekerev tevel, to rule over the world. We say that every Shabbos morning. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean that Hashem has given power to the stars to rule over the world? What do you think that means? So, I always thought it means, or I always think it means, that it's referring to the fact that, again, we have these celestial beings that make a big difference in the world, right? The world needs the sun. The world needs the moon. There are different parts of the physical world that are run based on these luminaries. And that's what it means. And they have other types of control, light, dark, how we function. And that would be the meaning of Hashem has given them power to rule over the world. But it actually is something much deeper. And that is that the way the heavens and earth run, and this is found, and again, in many Svarim, the Feshachayim, other mystical works, and that is that basically that Hashem sends down his Shefa, Hashem sends down the energy, the light, the power in which everything is able to exist through many different levels. And actually, the planets and the sun and the moon and the stars and the constellations are actually one layer of that process. And that in essence, the energy and the shefa, that's called the flow that Hashem sends into the world for the world to exist, goes through the sun and the moon. It goes through that. We don't see how it works, but it does work through the sun and the moon and the stars. They are they are one level of conduits through which all this flow from the highest worlds comes down to this world for this world to exist and to function. And therefore, Rabbi Matisyahu Salomon writes that the people of those generations, you know, those closest to the creation of the world, they understood this very well. They recognized and understood this very well. They really understood very well how the moon and the stars and the sun and the planets rule over the world, in the sense that they are one of the levels by which the flow comes down into this world. So when they looked at the stars and the moon and the sun, they saw things that really were accomplishing something very important in the process of running the world. They were a very important link in that process. And therefore they saw these celestial beings as real servants of Hashem. But real servants of Hashem in the sense that when Hashem is sending down his energy and flow for the world to exist and to run, they are the means by which it comes through. They are the distribution center. They are the ones by which the flow and energy comes to the world. They rule over the world in the sense that they are one of the links in the chain, and a very important link in the chain. And when you really truly understand how they are, then you really see them as doing the will of the king, like a king dispatches an officer to do something for him or a servant to do something for him. This is how they understood the sun and the moon and the stars work. The Nefesh HaChayim takes it even a step further. Because if you read the Rambam, then you see the Rambam is saying, well, they're servants of Hashem, and Hashem wants his servants to be honored because that's his honor, and therefore we will serve his servants. But the Nefesh HaChayim takes it a step further, and he writes, Shachashvu b'shibush daitam, they thought in their mistaken philosophy, Kiram Hashem, Hashem is exalted, v'lashomayim kevoida, his honor is in the heavens, v'ein kevoidoi lashkiach ha'bruizeh ha'olam ha'shofel. It's not honorable for Hashem to have to be dealing with this lowly world. So they actually thought that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam kind of got out of running the world. And he actually gave it over to the planets and to the constellations. That they should run the world as they see fit. They actually looked at the concept of being able to address God directly with our lowly needs, chutzpah. That's how you talk to the king of all kings? That's how you talk to the most exalted kings, right? Make sure that my car works. Make sure that I have food to eat. Make sure I'm able to make a few bucks. That's what you say to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam, he's too exalted for that. He's too exalted for that. I don't know what he's doing otherwise, but he's too exalted for that. But their mistake lies in the fact that the truth being that Hashem does run the world, there is, as I said, there is a process. There is a chain, and the chain goes through the planets and the stars. And if you truly understand that, then you see the stars and you see the planets and the stars and the constellations actually running. Now the point is, are you going to look at them running things as independently running things? But they're not independently running because, you know, they are these, you know, they rebelled against God and, you know, they're doing their own thing. They're not doing their own thing. God gave them the power to do it. And God said, hey, you take it, you take care of it. But it all comes from starting from a point that there is this understanding that they are part of the chain. They are part of the process of how Hashem does send down the energy to run the world. But now they began thinking, says the Nefesh HaChayim, that they're the ones in charge. Hashem gave it over to them. Because Hashem doesn't deal with the lowly world. And it's a chutzpah to think that Hashem should deal with the slower world. And therefore he gave it over to the planets, he gave it to celestial beings for them to run the show. But therefore you worship them because, look, Hashem gave it over to them. If Hashem gave it over to them, then clearly it's befitting to worship them, to ask your needs from them, to thank them, to ask them for your help, because they're the ones who are taking over the show. So that's how the Nefesh HaChaim takes that. That's how far he takes it. He doesn't just take it as you honor the servant of the king, but rather the servants now, they took over the show. The king said, you take care of it, it's up to you, because I don't bother with these kind of things anymore. Okay, but whatever it is, this is the understanding of idol worship. The essential understanding of idol worship is not, you know, you decide, you take some, you know, some rock or some, you know, head of lettuce, and you decide, okay, this is God. That's not what it is. That's the form of idol worship that evolved. That was totally out of the original concept. But the original concept of Avodah Zarah, and the concept, as Yirmiyah HaNavi said, was still existing in his time, was a concept of Hashem has made the stars and the sun and the moon his servants to do his bidding and running the world. They are part. They are dispatched by Hashem to run the world. And in essence, that is true. The truth is, though, that Hashem has not removed his providence from running. Hashem has not removed himself from running the world. He is still running the world, but does it through these conduits. They took it either as, well, whatever they are the servants of Hashem, and it's the honor to Hashem to honor his servants. And as the Nefesh HaChaim says, it actually turned into a point in which people said, they are running things. Hashem doesn't bother anymore. They are the ones running the show, and therefore we have to deal with them. What Tzion Salman brings down from explanation from the Vilna Gaon to the first pasuk of the Seiros HaDibros. Anoicha Hashem Elokecha, Asher Hotzeicha Meretz Mitzrayim Beis Avadim. I am Hashem your God, who took you out from the land of Egypt, from the house of bondage. After that comes the second commandment. Lo yelocha Elohim acharim al panoi. You shall not have other gods al panoi in front of me in my presence. So the Vilna Gaon explains the pasuk in the following way: Anoichi Hashem Elokecha. I am Hashem your God. I am Hashem your God. I am running the world. I am your God. I am the one that is running everything in the world. How do you know? Asher Tzeicha Meretz Mitzrayim. I took you out of Egypt. I took you out of Egypt. Like we say in the Haggadah. I myself came down into Egypt. Although Egypt was considered Erev HaSa'aretz, it was the most spiritually impure place, where according to some commentaries, it was so impure that angels couldn't even go into Mitzrayim. But the point is that the point of the pasuk is, I am Hashem your God. How do you know? I took you out of Egypt. I did it. I personally came down into Egypt, the most impure place, and I took you out. Mi beis, from that land. Mi beis avadim, from the house of bondage. You were lowly slaves. Who is the one who took you out? I myself took you out. If I myself came down into Egypt and took you out, that shows that I am involved in the world. I am personally involved in the world. Therefore, you shall not have other gods al panai, in my presence. In my presence, you can't have other gods, which means there is no place for other gods because everything is my presence. I am everywhere. I am involved in everything, says Hashem. I didn't separate myself. I didn't leave this world up to others. I am involved. And therefore, even if you want to make an argument that you should give honor to the king's servant, because that's an honor to the king, the only time you give honor to a king's servant is when he's not in front of the king. But in front of the king, you don't honor the king's servant. That is a slap in the face to the king. So even if you want to honor, even if you want to argue and say that honoring Hashem's servants is honor to him, but not in the presence of the king. And since Hashem says, I am everywhere, I have not separated myself from the world, I'm involved in the world, I am everywhere, therefore there is no place for showing honor to anything else but me.
Well, there's a different notion of showing honor and worshiping and praying to, because we are giving honor to our parents, and
correct.
That also happens in the presence of kings, so
correct.
You will never say that if you're not allowed to do that.
Correct. That is correct. So what's the difference?
Yeah.
Because giving honor to a human being, right? First of all, it depends. How should we say this? when you start dealing with a celestial being, right, the honor you give it is more close to attributing real power to it in a godly sense. Like the Nefesh HaChaim is saying, the problem is that when you are worshiping in a sense of honor or praying for them to do these things, what you could be doing or what you could be doing very closely is what others were doing, which was saying we have to honor them because of what they do. And if we're saying that, we're saying that in the sense of, we can only say that if we're saying Hashem is not involved. And therefore, that's the problem. When a human being, you don't have that problem. Okay. So now this is what Avraham Avinu had to deal with. This was the philosophy that Avraham Avinu had to battle, in which he was trying to say, no, of course, don't think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not involved, and he has given over all control to these celestial beings. That is incorrect. Hashem is the creator of the world, and he is involved. Now, we're all very aware that Avraham Avinu was also involved in Hachnasas Archim, hospitality. It says he planted a Vita Eshel, he planted an orchard, he had an inn, right? Avraham Avinu's tent, open on all four sides for all people to come into. And there's also a famous Medrash that says that after Avraham Avinu would serve them food, what would he say? He would say, you should give thanks. Who should we give thanks to? You should give thanks to the creator of the world, the one who gives you this food. Who's that? And he got into a discussion with them, and he taught them about the belief in Hashem through this, after he would go ahead and give them the food, and he would encourage them to give thanks, he encouraged them to give thanks to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So, when you first hear this Medrash, it sounds like this Hachnasas Archem, the act of hospitality, was the hook, right? Avraham Avinu got them in his house, he got them with a good meal, he's got them under his control now, and this is how he's going to influence them. You know, they say, by Kirev, right? What's the best way to bring someone close to Hashem? Give him a good piece of kugel, a good piece of chicken, right? You invite him over, you give him a good meal, you show him the joy, you show him the enjoyment, and that loosens him up to be able to listen to what you have to say. That is how we would assume. It sounds like that's what Avraham Avinu was doing also. Rabbi Tzion Salomon brings from Rabbi Eliyahu Lapyan the following explanation. No, it wasn't just the hook. It wasn't just the way of getting them in. But rather, if the whole point of idol worship was this idea, as the Nefesh HaChaim says, that people had decided that Hashem gave over the running of the world to his servants, and he is too beyond and great to bother with the lowly world. If that was the essential philosophy that was leading to everything. So Avraham Avinu wanted to show them that that is a mistake. And he showed them that mistake on himself. Because he invited these people into his home. Who served them? Who took care of the guests?
He did.
Not his servants. Avraham did it. And now Avraham was no slouch, right? Avraham was not just, he opened up a tavern and, he was the bartender and he was just, taking care of things. Avraham Avinu was a prince of Hashem. Avraham Avinu was a wealthy man. He was a famous man. He was a very honorable man. He wasn't just the guy running an inn. And he himself is serving the people. He himself is taking care of them. And the people respected him for it. So Avraham Avinu's message when he said to them, you should bless Hashem, is that if you're able to recognize and accept and respect what I'm doing here, I myself am taking care of you, you actually respect and recognize my humility, that I find it important enough that I personally should take care of you, then why can't you believe that about the Ribbono Shel Olam? Why can't you believe that the same way that I, who want to do good with you, I do it personally, I don't give it to others to do, the Ribbono Shel Olam, who is the ultimate good, who created the world to be good, why can't you accept that he is the one that is giving you the good? Not that it's beyond him, not that it's below him to do these things, and he gave it out to others to do. If you can respect me for doing it personally, then the Ribbono Shel'olam, who is the ultimate good, who wants to do good, why can't you accept and respect the fact that it's not lowly for him to be involved, but rather he is still involved because he wants to be good and shower good upon his creations? So the hospitality of Avraham Avinu is not just a way of softening them up, but rather it's the example that he's trying to assert. It's the example he's trying to set for them. He is actually trying to show them that the same way you respect and accept that I am personally serving you because I want to be good, I want to do good with you, that is how you should be able to accept the Ribbono Shel Olam, who is the ultimate good and the ultimate giver of good. So it's not just a hook, but it's part of the process. It's part of the process of bringing the belief of the Ribbono Shel Olam to people, because if what took them away from believing in Hashem is the idea of that Hashem, if the world is too lowly for Hashem to be involved in, then Avraham is trying to set the example to show people, no, it's not considered lowly to serve people, but rather it's a true show of wanting to do good with people, of wanting to showering good onto others. Okay. The next thing I'd like to share with you is about the Sefer Solomon's explanation of this test of Lech Lecha. This test of Lech Lecha. So let's just read the first pasuk. Actually, the first two pasukim. Vayomer Hashem el Avram. Hashem said to Avram. Stop right there. There's something very unique about these words. Hashem said to Avram. This is the first time that Hashem speaks to Avram. Nowhere else in the Torah does it say that Hashem spoke to Avram. Which means that everything that Avraham Avinu did until now, everything that he did, recognizing Hashem, fighting for the belief in Hashem, being ready to give up his life for Hashem, Hashem never told him any of these things directly. He never had a prophecy about any of these things. Everything came to Avraham through his intellect. His intellect, his purity of intellect, all these things, he was able to rise to a level of pure, unadulterated intellect that brought him to the ultimate truth, which is the belief in Hashem, what Hashem is, and what Hashem wants. That's what he did until now. Now is the first time he is receiving a prophecy from Hashem and receiving a mitzvah, receiving a commandment. Lech lecha, leave. Let's read on. Lech lecha me'artzecha me'ladetecha be'beis avicha el aretz asher arecha. Go from your land, from your birthplace, from the house of your father to the land that I will show you. Ve'escha v'goy gadol, I'll make you into a great nation. V'varechacha, I will bless you. V'gadol shemecha, I will make your name great. V'heyeh bracha, you shall be a blessing. V'avarcha v'varechacha, I'll bless those who bless you. Mekalelcha a'ar, I will curse those who curse you. V'nivruchu v'chal kamishpachai su'adama, all the families of the earth shall be blessed through you. Okay. So famous question, we mentioned this question a number of times before, and that is, if Lech Lecha is a test, what kind of test is it if Hashem tells you, go to this land, and I'll make you great, and I'll make you into a great nation, and I'll bless you, I'll make your name great. Sure, it's not easy to leave your hometown, but if you're told by leaving your hometown, you're going to make it big, I'll make you into a great nation, which means Hashem is telling Avraham, right now Avraham has no children. That already saw in the end of last week's parasha. And Hashem is telling Avraham, I'll make you into a great nation. Where? Not here. Where I'm telling you to go. So who wouldn't go?
Well,
you need to trust. It's a prophecy. Hashem is telling you go and I'll make you into a great nation. You're getting a prophecy about that. What's the big test? What's the test? So the answer that's given by the Padam Yafis is that the Padam Yafis says that the difference is like this. There are many mitzvahs that we have physical pleasure from. And our challenge is to make sure that we don't do the mitzvah just for the pleasure, but we do the mitzvah because it's what Hashem wants from us. That's always the challenge. By Onik Shabbos, right? Shabbos is a time to enjoy. Okay, so your intention can be that, okay, you know, it's Shabbos, you have a good chant, and that's what Shabbos is about. Or, no, Hashem wants us to delight in Shabbos, but that delight has to be not for our own personal sake, but part of our service to Hashem. So anytime we have a mitzvah that has physical pleasure, physical benefits to it, there is always a challenge to make sure that we're not doing it for the benefits, for the physical pleasure, but rather we're doing it because this is what Hashem wants us to do. So therefore, what's Avraham Avinu's test in Lech Lecha, says the Parim Yafis? Hashem tells Avraham, leave your land and you're going to make it big. So when Avraham leaves his land, why is he leaving his land? Two possible reasons. Either because now I'm going to make it big, or because Hashem told me, Lech Lecha me'artzecha, go. Yeah, Hashem told me by going I'm going to have all these benefits. But Hashem is telling me to go. I have to go because it's a mitzvah. And therefore, Avraham Avinu's test is, when he goes, what's his intention? His intention, I'm going because Hashem gave me the mitzvah, because Hashem commanded me to go. I'm going because Hashem told me to do so. I'm going because this is what Hashem wants for me. Or is his intention, I'm going because I'm going to make it big, or at least at a certain level. So Avraham Avinu's test of Lech Lecha, says the Parim Yafis, is, will he be doing it? Will he have some kind of personal intentions involved when he leaves? Or will he be doing it because Hashem told him to do so? And what does the Pasuk say? The Pasuk says, Vayelech Avram Kasher Dibra Elav Hashem. And Avraham went as Hashem told him. When he went as Hashem told him. He left not because I'm going to go make it big, but rather he left because Hashem wanted him to do so. The test of Avram was, would he do Lech Lecha completely l'shem shemayim because Hashem told him to do it, or would there be mixed in personal motives? That was his test. And he passed it, as the Pasuk says, he went as Hashem told him.
But you keep saying not because, and I was wondering why you don't want to say not only because.
I want to say because I'm not going to say, if maybe I'm not going to be clear, but what I'm saying is like this, that even if Avram would be having personal motives,
he should be happy that he will have divination.
But again, why is he doing what he's doing?
But
that's the thing. So what I mean is like this, you know, there's times where you can do a mitzvah, right? And you have mixed intentions, right? I'm doing it for Hashem and I'm having a benefit. But I have both intentions when I'm doing it. Both become my motives. What's supposed to be happening is that Avraham Avinu's test is his motives should be pure. I'm leaving because of the fact that Hashem wants me to. Yes, I'm thankful for what the benefits are going to be. But that's not my motive. That's the test. And even if Avraham wouldn't, and all I was trying to say was, is that Avraham, you know, I would expect Avraham Avinu to at least have both motives. But the point was that he should have a pure motive. And that's what the Torah is testifying to. Now, Matisyahu Solomon expands upon this in a very interesting way. Because as we pointed out before, this is the first time Hashem is telling Avraham to do. Until now, everything that Avraham Avinu did was not because Hashem told him to do it, but because it, with his intellect and with his purity of intellect, purity meaning no selfish motives, nothing trying to go ahead and support what he really wants, a pure seeking of the truth, with his pure intellect, he recognized Hashem, he recognized what Hashem wants, he kept the mitzvahs, he was ready to give up his life, all because he recognized the truth. But that means that until now, and that's no small feat in the kind of world that Avraham Avinu was living in, but what that means is, though, that up to this point of time, Avraham Avinu does everything, why? Because he wants to. Or because he realizes this is what has to be done. This is the first time that he has to basically do something, not because I recognize it as right, but because Hashem told me to do it. That's part of the test here. It's not just a test only because, well, hey, look what I have to gain from. Yeah, there's a lot to gain from it. But it's more than that also, he's pointing out. Until now, everything Avraham Avinu does is because he accepts it. He recognizes that this is right. And like I said, that was no small feat in the world that he was growing up in. But now he had to do what he was doing, not because he recognized it as the truth, because he accepts that's the right thing. He understands that's the right thing. He's got to be doing it because this is what Hashem wants from him. And that was the test of Lech Lecha. Okay. So we start a little bit here with the first test, and now let's jump to the last test in the parsha, in this week's parsha, which is Bris Milah. Right? Avraham Avinu is given a mitzvah of Bris Milah. So first of all, I'd like to share with you what the Sefer HaChinuch writes about this mitzvah, the mitzvah of Bris Milah. Okay. So he writes, V'inya mitzvah zu, and the nature of this mitzvah is, Shechaitchen ha'arla machapa reish ha'gaviyah, you remove the foreskin that is covering the male organ. Upayrin krum rach shalamati mimena. Then you have to pull away a membrane, a skin that's above it. Kadesha tisgala roisha atara shabaisa aver, in order to completely expose the top of that limb. Kiyadua lemevinim, because it's well known to those who understand, shatashlam tsurasa adam, that the perfection, the completion of the physical form of man, b'hasir mimenu oisa arla, is when that foreskin is removed, shehi taisefes bai, because it's basically superfluous. It's a superfluous piece of flesh, it's a superfluous piece of a person's body, and Hashem has given us this mitzvah to perfect the body by removing that skin and the membrane below it. So the Mevinim, he says, those who truly understand the essence of what we're doing, they understand that the point that what we're doing when we do a bris milah and remove the foreskin is completing and perfecting the physical body. So he explains this when he's explaining inyan ha-mitzvah, the nature of the mitzvah. Then he writes, b'shar shei mitzvah zu, the root of the mitzvah, meaning a reason that we have for this mitzvah, or a lesson that Hashem wants to take out from this mitzvah. L'fi sharatza Hashem yisparach lekabaya ba'am, asher hivda liya yisnikra al shmai, the Rebbeinu Shalom wanted to affix into the nation that he has separated to be called by his name, oyis kavua begufam, he wanted to affix in them a permanent sign in their bodies, lahavdila misha'ar ha'amim mitzuras gufam, to actually separate them from all other nations in the form of their body. As they are separated and different from them in the form of their souls. That their goings out and comings in, meaning their purpose in life, is not the same. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the mitzvah of Mila in order to put to affix a permanent sign in our physical bodies, that we be different physically from other nations, to remind us that we are different than them. That as he writes, to separate them physically as they are separated in their neshamas, in their souls. Spiritually, we have a whole different purpose than the nations of the world, and therefore Hashem puts this, makes us physically different also. Basically to set this idea in our minds that we are different, that we're different than them. We're meant to be different, our purpose in life is different than them, and therefore basically to remind us of that, he puts this sign in our bodies, making our bodies different, to bring out this idea that we are different than them in who we are.
I'm wondering if there is an additional significance in that the Jews themselves do it rather than...
Hold on. Okay. V'nikba hevdel begulas hazab l'fishu siba l'kiyam amin. Okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to put a sign in our bodies to remind us that we're different. Why in that part? The answer is because that's the source of existence. Life comes about through there. And therefore, it's there that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he tells us, meaning at the source of life, realize that you are meant that you are different. Another reason why it's where it is, and actually should be, which another reason why we're doing this is because, as we mentioned before, it's a tashlum, it's a completion of the body. V'ha'ama nifchar, and the chosen people, chavetz Hashem yisparach lahashtam tchunasei. The Rebbeinu Shlomo wanted us to complete the structure. V'ratz v'yis hashlama al yedei ha'adam. And he wanted this perfection, this completion to be done through man. V'loi b'roi sholei mi beten. Didn't create him complete from the stomach, which is a famous medrash that asks, well, if the whole point of why, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want the Arla, then don't give us one. Then don't give us one. Lirma is Elov, but rather HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to teach us. Ki kasher tashlam tsuras gufay al yadai, just as the perfection of the body is through you, kein biyadai lahashlam tsuras nafshay b'echshir pulaysev. It's up to you to perfect your souls. So the same way you have to do this perfection, this completion of the physical body, that is to show us, we also, it's up to us to complete the perfection of our neshamas, of our souls, through our actions. That's the Sefer Chinuch I wanted to share with you. And then I want to conclude with a thought from Rav Moshe Feinstein. And that is like this. Bris Milah, the mitzvah of Milah, is also considered one of the tests that Avram Avinu was given. Okay, now, again, what was the test? If Hashem, you're a prophet, and Hashem says to you, right, you have to do a bris Milah, okay, then what are you going to say, no? What are you going to do? You're going to say no? So the answer is going to be in the direction of, you know, that the question is not, is Avraham Avinu going to do it or not? But rather, how is he going to do it? Is he going to do it begrudgingly? He really doesn't want to do it, but I have no choice. Or is he going to do it wholeheartedly? So there is something about Bris Milah that Avraham Avinu could have some kind of hesitation, and because of, and he's still going to do it, but you know, he's not doing it with a full heart. So you could say that what's Avraham Avinu's hesitation? He's 99 years old. Right? Does Hashem tells him, do a bris? Does Hashem say you're going to survive it? Does Hashem say it's going to be so easy? But Hashem doesn't say, Hashem says do it. So Avraham Avinu knows he has to do it, but you know what's going to be. He could have some kind of hesitation. Not that he's not going to do it, and not that he's going to do it with dedication. But maybe deep down there is some kind of hesitation. He's not so happy about what he's doing because of the danger involved. Rav Moshe Feinstein points out a different thing that could have been bothering Avraham Avinu. And that was the fact that Avraham Avinu could have been afraid to do Bris Milah, or would have hesitated doing Bris Milah, because it actually would become an impediment to his ability to bring people closer to Hashem. Because when you're trying to influence a person for the positive, to change their ways, so basically that person has to see you as an equal. He has to see you. You and I are the same. You've raised yourself higher. You perfected yourself. You've improved your actions. So you can tell me to do the same thing. You've been there. You're just like me. We do it all. You're just like me. You've done it. You're doing these things. You're doing the right things. You can tell me also what I should do. But if let's say you're some person that's on a completely different level, you're in a different sphere. You're in a different galaxy. Okay? You're on a completely different level than me. Or I perceive that. Or you show yourself like that. So then the person says, what are you telling me to do? It has nothing to do with me. What you do is what you do, because you're on that level. What's it going to do with me? Avraham Avinu is afraid that if he does Bris Milah, which means he's supposed to be different than everyone, then that at the very least becomes an excuse for people to say, well, you know, if you're different and you're special and you're chosen, so that's for the things that you're trying to profess for you to do. It's not for me. So Avraham Avinu's hesitation in Bris Milah could have been, again, a hesitation. He doesn't have a choice not to do it. But his hesitation doing it could have been because this may become an impediment for his ability to be Makara people, bring people closer to Hashem. But Avraham Avinu does it wholeheartedly. Why? Because, as we say, we do ours, we do what Hashem wants from us, and what's going to happen from that? What's going to be the results of that? That's in the Rebbeinu Shalom's hands. That's not my worry. That's not my concern. My concern is do what the Rebbeinu Shlomo wants and do it wholeheartedly. What's going to come from that? That's an answer to the Rebbeinu Shlomo. That's not me. So the test of Bris Milah is going to be would Avraham Avinu do it wholeheartedly? Why shouldn't you do it wholeheartedly? Says Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, because Avram could have been afraid that this would be a turnoff to people. It would give people an excuse to say that what he teaches them is not relevant to them. Avram Avinu still does the mitzvah wholeheartedly, does what Hashem wants from wholeheartedly, and whatever is going to happen after that is all in Hashem's hands.